97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This is perfect. Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. It's been a hunting excursion here in my very own home. A mouse. It was like an episode of Tom and Jerry. I have been up since 3:45 this morning. We saw it come in the house, and it was you know, mice are cute, and we have one cat. Well, we have three cats, but one cat I think wants it to be its baby, and he can play with it. But I'm telling you what, buddy, that one cat stayed awake all night looking for it, or at least babysitting it in the corner. And it was like an episode out of Tom and Jerry.
So sorry, funny. Bo. See, it's Second Amendment Radio in the Great Indoors today.
It was. It was.
You know, you could wish you could go pew pew right there.
Ooh, hold on. I've got one of those assault rifles for bugs.
Nice.
You see those things?
I have.
Uh huh.
I could bring that out. Anyway, so it's been hilarious to see these guys corner and sit in a corner all night long. But anyway. I've been up.
So you've got three cats and a mouse has managed to survive. What's wrong with the cats?
The night. Absolutely. Yeah. We have one indoor outdoor lion, which is an unbelievable cat. I mean, my wife actually said, I hope I don't wake up with a headless mouse on my pillow, because he usually just eats the head and just leaves the rest of whatever it is.
Oh, that's appealing.
At the door.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So that was my hunting excursion. How are you, Mark?
Hey, doing great, man. It's been a fantastic week and, no complaints at all. Looking forward to a little vacation. Gonna take a couple days off, and it's gonna be fun.
Are you traveling? Are you?
I am.
You, oh, what?
I am.
What are you gonna do down there?
I'm heading down to Fort Myers, taking my mom down to visit her 97-year-old sister. How about that?
How beautiful is that?
We're gonna have a big party. We're gonna party.
I
all
bet
weekend.
You are.
We'll be in bed by 8 o'clock every night. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I was gonna say, party starts at 2:30. That's very cool. And you're flying or driving?
Oh, we're flying. Yeah, we're flying. We'll okay. go down over the long weekend and come back on Monday and be back at work on Tuesday. So it'll be great.
That's great. Yeah. You definitely deserve it with the news cycle that we've been experiencing the last few weeks. Whew,
I'm buddy. Telling you. It's true, and while during the show today we're going to talk a little bit more about hunting season coming up and the weather, which of course we had weather that moved through this week, and how you can be a trained storm spotter and all that. That's just part of what's happening. We got weather balloons all over the place from China, and we're shooting things down, and we don't know where they are. Does that
UFOs.
Not baffle you?
Yeah, well, I think it's a big distraction, if I can be honest. I think it's a distraction for something. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
If you show them the sparkle of the knife, they'll never see it coming. that's just my theory.
It could be. It could be. But, you know, here's the thing about it. I've watched Top Gun Maverick 4 times, and I know the technology that they have on those F-18 jets, which are 30 yeah. years old now, and they can see the thing they're about to shoot on the camera, so I know they have pictures of this stuff. Why haven't we seen it, and why do they still not know what it is? It makes no
wow.
sense.
Yeah, I'll get you a tinfoil hat just like the one I've got.
I'm just saying. Wrap me
but
up.
But it is serious. I will tell you, we are going to talk weather in the show on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors this week on the show. And I have to tell you, I was at a lunch meeting with Hawk from Golden Oak Lending. He's a big supporter of our Big Dogs Poker Bash. March 5th, by the way, get signed up online on Facebook. But we were watching the Chiefs parade in Kansas City on the television. It was, you know, 70 to 65 degrees here. And in Kansas City, they were all wearing their big fur coats and everybody was bundled up. And I was actually laughing. But then again, the next day we got it.
It came here pretty quickly, didn't it? Pretty
yeah,
amazing.
It did. Yeah,
it was
did.
70. Then it went to 20 in 36 hours.
Congratulations to all the Chiefs fans out there. I watched the Super Bowl got invited to a little Super Bowl party. That was fun. Didn't win any money, unfortunately, on the little raffle that we did. I didn't win any money. I filled out a couple squares. Hate that.
I got invited. Did I tell you the story? I got invited to a Super Bowl party about 3 days before Super Bowl, And so, you know, I'm telling my wife, you know, she didn't want to go. I was like, oh, no, he's going to have a casino night. He's got a real craps table. He's got a, you know, a poker table, the legit casino in the guy's house. And 4 o'clock was when it starts. I walk up to the door and there's not very many cars. And I'm like, ooh, it's going to be an intimate party. Okay, this will be fun. Go in, knock on the door. And as the door opens up, I see Yellowstone on the screen. His girlfriend laying in one of those big monster Sharper Image type recliners, and he's got his pajamas on. I'm like, dude, didn't you just text me like 3 days ago that we're having a Super Bowl party? He goes, oh, I forgot to tell you we canceled it. So I tucked my tail between my legs, called my wife, said I'm on my way home. She goes, I'm putting chili on.
You and me and have both done that, and then we've shown up for cornhole parties a day late.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, what's going on? We're getting old.
You know what? It's my calendar that's screwed up, so don't follow me. I'll only wait for your invites.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I did want to bring up on a serious note the shooting that happened at Michigan State University.
Oh, it's terrible.
We covered it on my show this week, and it is horrible. But at the end of the day, you won't hear about it for long, because as these things go, it doesn't fit the media narrative. The same day it happened, the governor of Michigan, the attorney general of Michigan, the president of the United States immediately jumped out and said, gun violence, mass shooting, gun violence. We've got to stop this. Let's ban assault rifles. Except you look at this, and in this particular case, the guy used a pistol, used a handgun, right? He was a felon. Well, he should not have had a weapon. He should have been in jail for a weapons violation. And yet they're yelling for more gun laws when they don't enforce the ones that they have on the books. And they want to ban a weapon and use this as an example, even though this weapon wasn't even used in this assault. Yes, it's tragic. But when the guy drove a van down the sidewalk in New York City and killed one person and injured eight others, they didn't try to ban U-Haul vans. So once again, they focus on the tool used by maniacs and not the maniacs.
Well, and they really gave no information about the motive. And I don't know if they've come up with one at this point, but they just played it down so much and stifled the conversation. 43-year-old suspect, you know, self-inflicted gunshot wound. It's horrible. And he wreaked a terror on the campus. 3 dead, 5 injured, and then more, you know, emotionally damaged as well. But again, you know, this is the headline they want to come out and say, oh, we need to ban assault rifles.
Yeah.
No, this is evil. This is you know, hateful people that are doing things, and you can't put a law on that.
The sad thing about it is, though, if you look into the judge that handled his case that gave him probation, so he's arrested for carrying a weapon, and instead of locking him up for 4 or 5 years, this was 2019, so he'd still be in jail now. They bumped it down to a misdemeanor and gave him probation because of criminal justice warrior reform. This is a very progressive judge in Michigan who's decided that, you know, we're not solving the problem by just locking people up. What is it that they don't understand? They want more laws. They're screaming for more gun laws, but they won't enforce the ones that are on the books. When people are caught violating the law, throw the book at them, put them in jail, and you have eliminated that problem for a period of time. That's why we have laws in this country. Nobody could have prevented this guy from doing what he did. He would have figured out some way to do it. He's got a criminal record, you know, as long as his leg.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, this is, you know, a sad misrepresentation of what's really going on in the news. Like you said, it was reported mostly locally in Detroit. You know, the Detroit News had a big story on it. They've been following it. Of course, it's going to be concentrated there. But if it would have been a different person, not even going to describe a different person, but the other person, it would have been all over the news everywhere. And then you would have even heard a bigger cry for banning assault rifles, which I would like to consider mine defense rifles, because I don't believe I would use something like that.
Of course not.
So very sad story.
Yeah. And it'll disappear soon from national headlines for that reason. Right.
And I do want to stress, safety. We always talk safety with guns, and I'm going to shift gears for you real quick because a dear friend of mine, I learned on Super Bowl Sunday, just as I'm sitting down for the game, had died in a UTV accident. Actually, he didn't die in a UTV accident. There was a UTV that rolled into the Black River, and my buddy Mason was my hero and friend for so long. He actually dove into the river because there was a 12-year-old girl that was trapped, saved her, but died in the instance of saving her. And he, you know what? This guy was the salt of the earth. He would do anything for anybody, and he did it all the way till his last breath. So I just wanted to put it out there, Mark. I've been in a 3-wheeler accident before, broke my arm, ATVs, UTVs. When you're getting out there and trying to enjoy the outdoors, just be really, really careful every step of the way, and you know, and make sure people know what they're operating as far as the machinery goes, because it can be dangerous. I mean, that's why they got the stickers on it that say it can cause death.
You can't stress it enough, right? I mean, absolutely. Like with a boat, when I boated regularly, you consistently see people doing things that were either dangerous or stupid, because when you buy a boat, you're not required to take any training. You're not. You don't have to have a license to boat, so you go out and do what you want. And a lot of people just don't pay close enough attention to safety, so I hope they do. Good advice there, Bo Matthews. Coming up, we're going to talk to Tim Chelswick from Drury Outdoors. This guy is either hunting or fishing or thinking about hunting or fishing, and there are some new regulations out there coming up for the next deer season. If you're an outdoorsman and love to hunt, you're going to want to hear what Tim has to say. Coming up next on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
This is a Thanksgiving song. I hope you enjoy it. Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. Oh, I love you. Love to eat turkey, 'cause it's good. Love to eat turkey like a good boy should, 'cause it's turkey to eat. So good.
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. You're going to get it all here, even when it's out of season, like that Thanksgiving song from Adam Sandler. This segment of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors brought to you by Razorback Armory has donated to our Poker Bash a G-Force defensive home defense shotgun. And a big thanks to them. They've got some great products, including Mantis X shooting systems. Check them out at RazorbackArmory.com. Into Pear on Manchester Road, just east of 270. Tim Chelswick is from Drury Outdoors. He's a regular on our talk show here. And we get him now because we're going to talk about a whole bunch of different things. Various hunting seasons, black bass in the Ozark streams, managed turkey hunt draws, regulation changes. He's all up on that. You are up on that, aren't you?
Among other things, yes.
Yeah, there's a few other things. He's a great dad. He's a physical fitness nut. Tim, life is 2023 starting off good for you, sir?
It kind of started out quietly. My deer season ended January 15th with a whimper. I killed a few does. I did not kill a mature buck, so that's kind of a bummer. But really glad and grateful to have filled the freezer with some locally sourced protein.
Yes.
And kind of turn the page on that, and I'm looking forward to spring turkey season.
Yeah, welcome over, Tim. Welcome to the team. I too got a doe this year, but not a buck. So when you're getting compared to Mark Cox in terms of hunting luck, that may not be a good direction that you're headed there.
Safe. Not an enviable club.
it's not a club you want to join.
Mark, you know, the point of solace I think that you and I can both have is that we have done something to control the herd in Missouri, because too many of us whitetail hunters are only going for big bucks, and that's part of the reason why we see the problem we do today with deer numbers out of control in a lot of parts of our state, because guys are not we're not taking does out. We're wanting to shoot the big buck, and we want the antlers for the wall, but we're neglecting the herd management and the conservation component of hunting. And so you and I have done our parts, taking a few does out of the population this year.
Tim, what was the take this year? I mean, maybe not exact numbers, but was it up or was it down in either direction?
I don't know. This is where deer hunting just becomes such an intensely personal thing. I've not checked the numbers. I know the numbers for the firearm seasons were pretty good. I think they were up. And so there's lots of opportunity. There's no reason why people should not be going out and taking a few deer. But boy, and we even have like these suburban hunting organizations that their mission is to help landowners decrease the number of deer on their property. But these landowners are finding when they set up these deals with these people to come in that these guys are passing on does and waiting for bucks. And it's like the very reason you're out here is to help control the population. The best way to do that is to take some does. And here you are trying to kill a buck for the wall. So, man, as deer hunters, I think we just need to do a better job about thinking outside of ourselves and thinking about herd dynamics and population sizes, and be willing to take some does, even if it means you donate them. Like, do the Share the Harvest program. If you don't want to mess with cleaning a doe, whatever, I think you should, but there are programs out there to help subsidize that, and you're donating healthy protein to a family that is in need.
Yeah, it's a great point. My son got an 8-point buck this year. I was proud of him for that one.
Not a fan of that guy.
No? Exactly. Yeah, Dad didn't, but the boy did, so I was happy for him.
That's great. Did he during firearm season?
It was during firearm season, and cool. we debated whether or not to maybe try to get it mounted, and ultimately we just it was overall small enough that we just decided to take the rack, and and then we got the deer processed, so good.
One of the best, I think one of the best hybrid solutions is to do a European mount where you just have the skull, skull in the rack, and that's kind of a cool look. So, and it's a lot cheaper than
we thought mount. About that. My brother-in-law has done that for a couple of his boys, and it's a very involved and messy process from what I hear.
It can be.
Certain steps we won't talk about on the radio that you have to deal with. Anyway, what season are you in now, Tim? What are you doing?
A season of solace.
Okay.
Just recuperating from deer season. Actually, I'm pulling my trail cameras down, going through and organizing all my files of all the pictures, and a lot of the 2 and 3 and 4 year old deer that I saw this year, I'm putting into files and organizing them as so that I can be ready for next year. As they, in late summer, as I'm watching them grow via trail cams, I can say, oh, this is that deer, and he kind of frequented here, and this was his normal pattern, trying to put together this larger story on these deer so that I know who they are and I have a better chance of encountering them in the 23 season. So that's kind of what's happening right now. Shed season, the deer still are around the St. Louis area. Most are still holding. Like, I've seen some that are half racked, and some sick deer, they tend to drop their antlers earlier, but there's still a lot of deer holding their antlers. And I like to get out usually in March is when I'll start putting some boots to the ground to start looking for sheds, which is just a lot of fun in itself. And then it's, thinking about spring crappies and turkeys and morels and all the great things that happen here in Missouri and on the Illinois side around this time of year.
Tim, let's step back. Tim Jelzvik from Drury Outdoors is our guest on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Step back to the sheds, because my neighbor come up on me, and he had his binoculars, and I said, what are you doing? He goes, I'm shed hunting. And are there any kind of rules with that, or you finders keepers?
Yeah, it's pretty much, and this is the neat thing about shed hunting is, like, the public park where you walk with your family in the evenings, you probably can't deer hunt in there, but all the deer that live in there, because they know it's a haven for them, they're going to drop their antlers in and around there. So you can shed hunt it. A lot of great public ground to shed hunt coming up here in March. But there are a few places like Lone Elk County Park. They don't allow you to shed hunt out there, obviously, because they got big elk antlers that, that are dropping. They don't want people taking those out of there. But most places there are no real restrictions on. Obviously, you can't trespass, but there are no real restrictions on shed hunting.
Good. Okay. Any regulation changes that you know about for next year in the deer season?
It's mostly around the Department of Conservation's efforts to mitigate the spread of chronic wasting disease. So, and what that typically entails is more generous tag distribution. And I know that they have a new antlerless firearms season that runs from October 6th through 8th. So you can go out and kill a few does with your gun way earlier, in early October.
Wow!
As opposed to waiting for the rifle season, so they're trying to just again cut numbers wherever they can. In CWD counties, they have a new firearms season that runs from November 22nd to November 26th. So, and you can, if you have an unfilled firearms antler tag, you can fill that during that short little window of time. Increasing antlerless firearms tags and landowner tags also. So just trying to be a little more generous, encouraging people to take more deer, specifically does. Like if we're going to control the population, you have to shoot does.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's switch to fishing because we're days away from trout season. Will you be out there with your family?
I can think of 1,200 things I would rather do than stand shoulder to shoulder with guys.
Way to promote.
Untangling fishing lines. It's just, some people, it's a tradition and they love it. They can't wait for that whistle to go off and start casting. I don't know if it's just because I'm a middle-aged white guy and I hate lines and I hate being, shoulder to shoulder with people, but it's just never really appealed to me. Like I'll trout fish over the winter and hit some of the red ribbon section down on the Merrimack, down 44 here. It's catch and release and, just the fly rod go down there. But a lot of people, and for some people, like this is their exposure to trout fishing. And so it is a big deal and it's a big money maker. It's it kicks a lot of money into conservation and habitat work and supports the trout fisheries. So March 1 is when the trout parks open, and it is kind of a holiday here in Missouri for sure.
Yeah.
And usually the limit's around 4, like you can keep 4 fish, but you have to have a fishing permit and you have to have a daily trout permit to fish inside the trout parks.
Yeah. I can't wait. I am a neophyte when it comes to fly fishing. I've taken some lessons. I've done it in Montana a couple times, and when I go back in July, we're gonna take the fly rod and try to wet a few lines up there around Glacier National Park. I love it. I haven't been extremely successful at it, but it's always a lot of work, and you're out in the water, and it's just the scenery can't be beat up there.
Fly fishing is kind of like the bow hunting of fishing, because there are certainly easier ways of killing deer than waiting until they get within 20 yards with flinging an arrow at them. And certainly there are easier, more effective ways of catching trout than using a size 18 hook on 1 pound test tippet and just how challenging that is. But Mark, I think kind of you're the kind of guy that enjoys the process.
Right.
And that's what really draws a lot of people, including myself, to the fly fishing experience, is that you're in beautiful places. You're using a very elegant, it's like the lightsaber of the fishing world, using a very elegant weapon.
Nice.
Yeah. Carl's losing his mind right now. Yes. Well, good luck. I hope you have an awesome time. And even if you don't catch anything, man, you can't beat the scenery.
No, you really can't. And the last time, all I did was lose a lot of very expensive flies. So hopefully I figured out this time.
Yeah, someone's got to keep those fly tires in business.
That's right. Absolutely.
Tim Chelsvik from Drury Outdoors, thank you so much for your knowledge and your wisdom and your friendship. We appreciate everything you and your family do. He's growing a great Christian family, and really proud to know you, man. You do a great job. And the difference between Tim Chelsvik and Mark Cox is that Tim has donated venison to me because he had a freezer full.
Uh-huh.
Pressure's well, I would on. Say that was at least 70% venison. Oh, the 30% awesome. You can use your imagination.
It's opossum or something, I'm sure. don't worry about
we call
it.
Them yard, yeah. We call them yard dogs out in High Ridge.
Yeah, buddy. All right, we'll talk to you soon, Tim. Thank you so much.
Take care, boys. See ya.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So when you go out hunting, wherever you're doing, fishing, hunting, you got to check the weather, right, Carl?
Yeah.
You do. Coming up, we're going to talk to folks from the local weather service. They do classes in this. I had no idea. You can take storm spotter classes. We're going to have all the details for you coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Thank you.
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Speaking of outdoors, there you have it. Riders on the Storm. I don't know about you. I watch the sky these days for weather balloons, whether they're American or Chinese or whatever they happen to be. Keeping an eye out for it. But, you know, we had some storms this past week in February. How about that? That was a little unusual. Our guest joining us right now is Kevin Deitch. He's a warning coordination meteorologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And we're going to talk a little bit more about becoming a storm spotter. Kevin, I'm guessing you had your hands full this week, right?
We sure have. We're just getting all sorts of weather around here, but that's the Midwest.
Boy, that's the truth. For many years I worked in television news. I worked with a couple of meteorologists over the years from the University of Oklahoma. And those guys were just a little crazy because many of them were on some of those storm spotting teams like they have in the movies, and you see them driving into the storm. Have you ever done any of that?
I have, but it's been kind of on my own time, not through the Weather Service.
That's great. I mean, when I hear storm spotter, that's kind of what I think of, but that's not really what it is these days, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, a lot of people think that, and that you're referring to is actually storm chasing. And so the difference is, you know, you're getting in a car, you're going to chase the storm, find the tornado, you're on the road, you know, and honestly, it's very dangerous, especially if you're untrained. So our classes are storm spotting, and so we're just asking folks, you know, from the comforts of their own home, their work, their school, wherever they might be, you know, poking their eye out, telling us what they see, and then making sure they get to safety if the storm's heading their way.
And when your students, Kevin, when they go through your class, is there like a central location or an app where they upload the information that they've found, or a phone number that they call? How do you guys like collect all that data to get it out there to the weather meteorologists?
Yeah, there's multiple ways. So we do the old fashioned phone calls, which work great, especially if we're talking about tornadoes, you know, because we want to turn that information around as quick as possible. So we always tell our folks, you know, please, please call us if it's a tornado on the ground and it's doing damage, because we want to make sure we get that immediately. But there are other ways as well. So social media, we are on Facebook and Twitter. So a lot of our spotters will post pictures or videos there. And then we also have an online kind of spotter report form that folks can go to and enter the information there as well. So multiple ways, and, you know, depending on the person, you know, they might prefer one over the other.
Yeah. And I should mention again, of course, you're with the National Weather Service, and coming up next weekend, the 23rd, February 23rd, at the Gateway Convention Center in Collinsville, you're going to be having one of these storm spotter classes. What's it take to get signed up? Who can go? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So all of our classes are totally free and open to the public. So definitely want to make sure that's clear. And as far as the age group goes, you know, I get a lot of questions, you know, can kids come? And absolutely. I'd say that the topics are generally geared to probably fifth grade and older. So some of the younger kids, you know, might be a little over their heads. But kids are interested in weather, too. So, and I was one of them. So absolutely bring your kids along, especially if they're, you know, a little bit older. But, yeah, so the class, like you said, will be at the Gateway Center there on the 23rd. And no registration's required. You actually just show up. We have a big enough room that I think we'll be able to hold everyone. And it's a 2-hour class, which I know sounds long, especially in today's world. But we break it up nicely. We got a nice break in the middle. We have a lot of videos. We have a lot of interaction with the crowd. You know, we do some quizzes throughout, you know, kind of get the crowd thinking a little bit. So we've had really great feedback, and we look forward to anyone who wants to come out.
Well, what do they say? If you see something, say something. And if you know what you're looking at, I mean, because we all look at the cloud and we're like, ooh, what is that shelf cloud going to do or whatever? And if you don't know, you don't know. But if you listen to any radio or TV news programs, they are always hammering the weather because everybody is interested in as they plan their day and get their kids off to school and stuff like that. So it's important. And I think this is, you know, having a trained eye to understand what those clouds are doing is really important. So, you know, maybe it's a family field trip. What day is February 23rd? Is that a weekday or a weekend? I don't even have a calendar in front of me.
So February 23rd is a week from today, actually. So it'll be a Thursday.
Okay. So it'd be, and do you get like school field trips to come to this? Or I guess, is that more of a family thing or just people that have the time?
Yeah, it's people that have the time. So the time is 6:30. So it's 6:30 to 8:30 in the evening. And we do that on purpose. You know, hopefully folks are off work, kids are off school,
oh, okay.
So they have time. They have time to make it to these classes. But yeah, you kind of hit on, you know, my passion for the job, and that is weather affects everyone. And I think everyone at least has some interest in it because it affects you, right? So that's what I love about the teaching these courses. And we would get in there and we have people, you know, there are some people that are scared of weather that come and they just want to learn more about it. And that's what we do. We teach them about, you know, what makes a thunderstorm, what the different clouds mean, what to look for in the clouds, you know, kind of as a precursor to tornadoes, all that good stuff. And like I said, people really seem to enjoy it and nerd out with us at a weather class.
throw out all kinds of big words like cumulonimbus and all that good stuff that we remember.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know, speaking of a fear of the weather, now that I think about it, my mother, for my entire life that I can remember, insisted on having a weather radio at home. Like I grew up in Southern Ohio, and we did have a tornado come over our house one time when I was young. But she always wanted a weather radio, and you know, working, making sure it was set to go off if the alarm was set. Maybe that's more common than I thought.
Yeah, and I actually grew up in Southern Ohio myself. I'm a Cincinnatian.
But, me too, yeah. Right, Middletown, Ohio, very close to there.
Great,
yeah.
Great. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it depends on the person. You know, some folks, they've lived through a tornado or they lived through really bad weather. And so, you know, you live through something traumatic like that, you're going to make darn sure that you have a way to get the warning and that you get information because you don't want to go through that again.
Yeah.
And others, I think, just have an interest. You know, they want to be up to date on the latest and greatest. And so, yeah, there's all sorts of ways to receive warnings now, whether it's a weather radio, whether it's, you know, apps on your cell phone, whether it's radio or TV stations. And that's really the important thing, is to making sure you don't rely on just one way. And I think people are so reliant on cell phones these days, which are great. You know, they do a lot. But in these larger tornadoes, you can lose cell towers. You can lose cell service. And so that shouldn't be the only way that you have to get information.
That's a good point.
And those tornadoes can happen any time of the year. Of course, I'm thinking of the Amazon facility on the east side, that horrible, deadly tornado that ripped through there. Mayfield, Kentucky, at Christmas time or just before Christmas time,
yeah,
a little over a year ago,
yeah.
It destroyed an entire town. So really, you know, the biggest difficulty, Kevin, I would think, would be seeing or spotting storms at night. Can you only rely on the radar or the Chinese weather balloon?
Yeah, at night it's not good, right? You're relying on just solely lightning. We actually have a really good video that we show in our class of the Jefferson City tornado, which, if you recall, that went through around midnight there in Jefferson City back in 2019. And the only way that this person was able to see the tornado was the perfect lightning strike right behind it.
Wow.
And so it's too dangerous to even try to look at night. We always tell our spotters, you know, get to your safe place. You know, get to your basement, get to your interior room, and don't even try to see it, because most likely you're not going to be able to.
Yeah, true. Kevin Deitch, our guest, a warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service. And so let me ask this, Kevin. Do you have a recommendation when it comes to a weather app? I have a good friend who's a meteorologist here in town. I won't mention her name on the radio. But she once referred to those as crap apps. I don't know why, but she wasn't a big fan of just somebody pulling up radar and trying to read it themselves. I don't know.
Right. Unfortunately, us at the Weather Service, we don't have an app. So a lot of third parties will kind of take our information and then make it, you know, repackage it into an app. So I can't really tout an app that we have. What I will say is our local TV media partners, the TV meteorologists are outstanding at what they do. And they, a lot of them will kind of use our information to make their own forecasts. So that's a localized forecast that they have on theirs, on their apps there. So recommend those, recommend anything local. You know, you think national apps, you know, they're looking at the whole country. So you're not going to get the detail necessarily that you would from local meteorologists, you know, that are kind of in the area looking at the weather a lot more closely here.
Oh, yeah. And the technology has changed so much, you guys, because, I mean, like, they can show the little, I love the map with the little arrows that show the wind direction, and there's like 50 different arrows in the one screenshot that they do on TV. It's pretty impressive what you guys do. Have you been, in your word, a weather nerd for a long time of your life?
I have. I've been a weather nerd ever since I can remember. I grew up, you know, with my mom and dad looking at storms as they rolled in, sitting on the porch watching them. And honestly, ever since I was probably in third or fourth grade, I knew I wanted to be a meteorologist. I know there are people still, you know, late in life that don't know necessarily what they want to do. And I was really blessed to know what I wanted to do at a very young age, and been awesome to be able to chase my passion.
Fantastic.
Literally.
Yeah, no kidding. All over the world, wherever it takes you, that's great. So back to the event on the 23rd, if people can't make that for some reason, there are others that are offered coming up in I see Ferguson, Farmington, Warrenton, Lambert in the future. Where can people go to kind of get that information?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So head to our website. It's just weather.gov/St. Louis. Or you can just go to weather.gov and kind of click in the St. Louis area, and it'll take you to our homepage. And then right there at the top, we have a link of all the classes. So, yeah, as you mentioned, there's several still left. We're about halfway through our schedule. We're doing about 30 talks this year, which is the most we've ever done. So we're about halfway through, so there's still plenty left to go all across the area.
Kevin, you know, before we let you go, I just wanted to ask, you know, a lot of meteorologists put out their winter weather, you know, forecast months out. Is there any way that, are you guys collecting data to tell us, is this going to be a rough spring season as we transition into warmer temperatures? Any way to predict that, like months out?
Spring severe season is tough. What I can say is it does look warmer than normal, or at least chances are favoring warmer than normal temperatures, and chances are favoring above normal precipitation. So kind of reading into that, it does seem like it's going to be an active spring, at least with systems moving through. Now, to get tornadoes and to get hail and to get severe weather, there's a lot of things that have to happen kind of on a more...
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Speaking of outdoors, there you have it. Riders on the Storm. I don't know about you. I watch the sky these days for weather balloons, whether they're American or Chinese or whatever they happen to be. Keeping an eye out for it. But, you know, we had some storms this past week in February. How about that? That was a little unusual. Our guest joining us right now is Kevin Deitch. He's a warning coordination meteorologist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And we're going to talk a little bit more about becoming a storm spotter. Kevin, I'm guessing you had your hands full this week, right?
We sure have. We're just getting all sorts of weather around here, but that's the Midwest.
Boy, that's the truth. For many years I worked in television news. I worked with a couple of meteorologists over the years from the University of Oklahoma. And those guys were just a little crazy because many of them were on some of those storm spotting teams like they have in the movies, and you see them driving into the storm. Have you ever done any of that?
I have, but it's been kind of on my own time, not through the Weather Service.
That's great. I mean, I guess that's what, when I hear storm spotter, that's kind of what I think of, but that's not really what it is these days, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, a lot of people think that, and that, so that you're referring to is actually storm chasing. And so the difference is, you know, you're getting in a car, you're going to chase the storm, find the tornado, you're on the road, you know, and that's, and honestly, it's very dangerous, especially if you're untrained. So our classes are storm spotting. And so we're just asking folks, you know, from the comforts of their own home, their work, their school, wherever they might be, you know, poking their eye out, telling us what they see, and then making sure they get to safety if the storm's heading their way.
And when your students, Kevin, when they go through your class, is there like a central location or an app where they upload the information that they've found, or a phone number that they call? How do you guys like collect all that data to get it out there to the weather meteorologists?
Yeah, there's multiple ways. So we do the old fashioned phone calls, which work great, especially when we're talking about tornadoes, you know, because we want to turn that information around as quick as possible. So we always tell our folks, you know, please, please call us if it's a tornado on the ground and it's doing damage, because we want to make sure we get that immediately. But there are other ways as well. So social media, we are on Facebook and Twitter. So a lot of our spotters will post pictures or videos there. And then we also have an online kind of spotter report form that folks can go to and enter the information there as well. So multiple ways, and, you know, depending on the person, you know, they might prefer one over the other.
Yeah. And I should mention again, of course, you're with the National Weather Service, and coming up next weekend, the 23rd, February 23rd, at the Gateway Convention Center in Collinsville, you're going to be having one of these storm spotter classes. What's it take to get signed up? Who can go? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So all of our classes are totally free and open to the public. So definitely want to make sure that's clear. And as far as the age group goes, you know, I get a lot of questions, you know, can kids come? And absolutely. I'd say that the topics are generally geared to probably fifth grade and older. So some of the younger kids, you know, might be a little over their heads. But kids are interested in weather, too. So, and I was one of them. So absolutely bring your kids along, especially if they're, you know, a little bit older. But, yeah, so the class, like you said, will be at the Gateway Center there on the 23rd. And no registration is required. You actually just show up. We have a big enough room that I think we'll be able to hold everyone. And it's a 2-hour class, which I know sounds long, especially in today's world. But we break it up nicely. We got a nice break in the middle. We have a lot of videos. We have a lot of interaction with the crowd. You know, we do some quizzes throughout, you know, kind of get the crowd thinking a little bit. So we've had really great feedback, and we'll look forward to anyone who wants to come out.
Well, what do they say? If you see something, say something. And if you know what you're looking at, I mean, because we all look at the cloud and we're like, ooh, what is that shelf cloud going to do or whatever? And if you don't know, you don't know. But if you listen to any radio or TV news programs, they are always hammering the weather because everybody is interested in as they plan their day and get their kids off to school and stuff like that. So it's important. And I think this is, you know, having a trained eye to understand what those clouds are doing is really important. So, you know, maybe it's a family field trip. What day is February 23rd? Is that a weekday or a weekend? I don't even have a calendar in front of me.
So February 23rd is a week from today, actually. So it'll be a Thursday.
Okay. So it'd be, well, and do you get like school field trips to come to this? Or I guess, is that more of a family thing or just people that have the time?
Yeah, it's people that have the time. So the time is 6:30. So it's 6:30 to 8:30 in the evening. And we do that on purpose. You know, hopefully folks are off work, kids are off school.
Oh, okay.
So they have time. They have time to make it to these classes. But yeah, you kind of hit on, you know, my passion for the job, and that is weather affects everyone. And I think everyone at least has some interest in it because it affects you, right? So that's what I love about the teaching these courses. And we would get in there and we have people, you know, there are some people that are scared of weather that come and they just want to learn more about it. And that's what we do. We teach them about, you know, what makes a thunderstorm, what the different clouds mean, what to look for in the clouds, you know, kind of as a precursor to tornadoes, all that good stuff. And like I said, people really seem to enjoy it and nerd out with us at a weather class.
throw out all kinds of big words like cumulonimbus and all that good stuff that we remember.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, speaking of a fear of the weather, now that I think about it, my mother, for my entire life that I can remember, insisted on having a weather radio at home. Like, I grew up in southern Ohio, and we did have a tornado come over our house one time when I was young. But she always wanted a weather radio and, you know, working, making sure it was set to go off if the alarm was set. Maybe that's more common than I thought.
Yeah, and I actually grew up in southern Ohio myself. I'm a Cincinnatian.
But, me too, yeah. Right, nice. Middletown, Ohio, very close to there.
Great,
yeah.
Great. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it depends on the person. You know, some folks, they've lived through a tornado or they lived through really bad weather. And so, you know, you live through something traumatic like that, you're going to make darn sure that you have a way to get the warning and that you get information because you don't want to go through that again. Yeah. And others, I think, just have an interest. You know, they want to be up to date on the latest and greatest. And so, yeah, there's all sorts of ways to receive warnings now, whether it's a weather radio, whether it's, you know, apps on your cell phone, whether it's radio or TV stations. And that's really the important thing, is to making sure you don't rely on just one way. And I think people are so reliant on cell phones these days, which are great. You know, they do a lot. But in these larger tornadoes, you can lose cell towers. You can lose cell service. And so that shouldn't be the only way that you have to get information.
That's a good point.
And those tornadoes can happen any time of the year. Of course, I'm thinking of the Amazon facility on the east side. That horrible, deadly tornado that ripped through there. Mayfield, Kentucky, at Christmas time or just before Christmas time, a little over a year ago, it destroyed an entire town. So really, you know, the biggest difficulty, Kevin, I would think, would be seeing or spotting storms at night. Can you only rely on the radar or the Chinese weather balloon?
Yeah, at night it's not good, right? You're relying on just solely lightning. We actually have a really good video that we show in our class of the Jefferson City tornado, which, if you recall, that went through around midnight there in Jefferson City back in 2019. And the only way that this person was able to see the tornado was the perfect lightning strike right behind it.
Wow.
And so it's too dangerous to even try to look at night. We always tell our spotters, you know, get to your safe place. You know, get to your basement, get to your interior room, and don't even try to see it, because most likely you're not going to be able to.
Yeah, true. Kevin Deitch, our guest, a warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service. And so let me ask this, Kevin. Do you have a recommendation when it comes to a weather app? I have a good friend who's a meteorologist here in town. I won't mention her name on the radio. But she once referred to those as crap apps. I don't know why, but she wasn't a big fan of just somebody pulling up radar and trying to read it themselves. I don't know.
Right. Unfortunately, us at the Weather Service, we don't have an app. So a lot of third parties will kind of take our information and then make it, you know, repackage it into an app. So I can't really tout an app that we have. What I will say is our local TV media partners, the TV meteorologists are outstanding at what they do. And a lot of them will kind of use our information to make their own forecasts. So that's a localized forecast that they have on theirs, on their apps there. So recommend those, recommend anything local. You know, you think national apps, you know, they're looking at the whole country. So you're not going to get the detail necessarily that you would from local meteorologists, you know, that are kind of in the area looking at the weather a lot more closely here.
Oh, yeah. And the technology has changed so much, you guys, because, I mean, like, they can show the little, I love the map with the little arrows that show the wind direction, and there's like 50 different arrows in the one screenshot that they do on TV. It's pretty impressive what you guys do. Have you been, in your word, a weather nerd for a long time of your life?
I have. I've been a weather nerd ever since I can remember. I grew up, you know, with my mom and dad looking at storms as they rolled in, sitting on the porch watching them. And honestly, ever since I was probably in third or fourth grade, I knew I wanted to be a meteorologist. I know there are people still, you know, late in life that don't know necessarily what they wanted to. And I was really blessed to know what I wanted to do at a very young age, and been awesome to be able to chase my passion.
Fantastic.
Literally.
Yeah, no kidding. All over wherever it takes you. That's great. So back to the event on the 23rd. If people can't make that for some reason, there are others that are offered coming up in I see Ferguson, Farmington, Warrenton, Lambert in the future. Where can people go to kind of get that information?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So head to our website. It's just weather.gov/St. Louis, or you can just go to weather.gov and kind of click in the St. Louis area, and it'll take you to our homepage. And then right there at the top, we have a link of all the classes. So yeah, as you mentioned, there's several still left. We're about halfway through our schedule. We're doing about 30 talks this year, which is the most we've ever done. So we're about halfway through, so there's still plenty left to go all across the area.
Kevin, you know, before we let you go, I just wanted to ask, you know, a lot of meteorologists put out their winter weather, you know, forecast months out. Is there any way that, are you guys collecting data to tell us, is this going to be a rough spring season as we transition into warmer temperatures? Any way to predict that, like months out?
Spring severe season is tough. What I can say is it does look warmer than normal, or at least chances are favoring warmer than normal temperatures, and chances are favoring above normal precipitation. So kind of reading into that, it does seem like it's going to be an active spring, at least with systems moving through. Now, to get tornadoes and to get hail and to get severe weather, there's a lot of things that have to happen kind of on a more localized scale and time scale.
Yeah.
So kind of tough to predict those specifics, but it does look like we're going to see rain and several systems moving through this spring.
So you told me you grew up in Ohio, and of course, how long have you been in St. Louis?
I've been in St. Louis since 2016, so about 7 years.
So have you determined, it strikes me, having lived in other parts of the country, that weather forecasting here is a little bit more difficult because of the river, the confluence of the rivers and the amount of moisture, and oftentimes it seems like storms will be heading this way and look bad, and then they just part when they get to St. Louis.
It's the arch.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging really anywhere in the Midwest, right? We're kind of the battleground of the cold air from the north and the warm, moist air from the south and the Gulf of Mexico, so really anywhere in the Midwest kind of deals with this, you know, 80 degrees one day and 20 degrees the next day. Anywhere from Cincinnati to St. Louis is certainly a challenge.
Yeah, good stuff. Go Bengals. I mean, were you a Bengals fan?
Oh, big Bengals fan. Right, I'm still recovering. I was actually at the Chiefs game. I'm still recovering.
Oh, no.
Kevin Deitch, warning coordination meteorologist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Hey, great stuff this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You bet. Good to get you on here, Kevin. We'll have you on again soon, and maybe we can talk about the winter forecast next winter. How about that?
The Bengals next season.
And the Bengals next season.
Look forward to it.
Looking cloudy. All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Good stuff. Yeah. Glad to get him on here. I don't know. Do you sit out in the hot tub when a storm's coming and try to guess at it, what's happening next?
You know, I woke up early this week to lightning and thunder, and I won't get in it when it's doing that, mm-hmm. but it went away within a few minutes, so it didn't delay my dip.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. As long as we're not delaying your dip in the thought tub, that's a good thing. That's great. Hey,
Well, it's true. Anyway, yeah.
Hey, great to have you along for the ride this weekend. We hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you next time around on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.